welcome in another edition of the B Squared podcast as we record today on Monday, May 2nd, 2016. I'm Jordan Bernfield. He is Brian Beto. And Beto, the Cubs are 17-6. Life is good.
It's great. And, you know, they were 17-5 in April. And I was just thinking to myself, I think it was like their best April or the least amount of losses in 41 years. Maybe they just started later in the season that year in 75. But it's so nuts that they went through an entire month of April and lost just five times. And it just putting that perspective is quite the anomaly to me, considering where we were just 2 years ago. And I don't even know if they had five wins in April 2 years ago. So it was an awesome month all around. The best record in baseball. They're on pace to win 120 games. Again, we could talk about the sustainability of that as much as possible. But for the first month out of six, it was quite the ride. A lot happened in the first month.
They're going 156-6. We realize that, right?
Yeah, and if we can beat the Atlanta Braves, maybe.
That game yesterday, as we record this on Monday the 2nd. So they start the month of May with a loss that was pretty frustrating to the Braves. I realize that they're 17-6. I realize that they play great. I don't want to spend this podcast where the Cubs are this good complaining about a game, but you watched this yesterday and I'm sitting there watching this going, how are they losing to this team? I don't even know who Malik Smith is. I didn't even know that Malik's is a name, but apparently it is a name and they won the game.
I feel like we have problems with these speedster guys. Billy Hamilton did a number on us in that first series. Even homered in that series. Malik Smith did it. John Lackey early on was cruising. What, he had four no-hit innings and got all pissed off at Kelly Johnson, supposedly, for trying to break up a no-no on a bunt single, even though it was a scoreless game. We can get into that another time. But I was sitting there and like, I feel like he's cruising along and then all of a sudden he just hits a wall. And that's what happened again yesterday. They're down 3-0. And I'd made my peace with it. I was thinking, you know what? They're going to be 17-6 if they lose this game. Not a big deal. They're going to lose games against bad teams. We always reference and go back to the Philly series at home last year. It's going to happen. And I had made my peace with it. And of course, they have to come all the way back, get two
those
in the
darn
eight.
Cubs. Addison, they had to have an exciting rally. How could they?
I know. Addison Russell ties it in the ninth, and then Rondon, who hasn't been scored upon all season, of course gives it up in the tenth against it's got to be the worst offense in baseball. I don't even want to say probably and sugarcoat it. And they lose 4-3, and then I get irrationally angry. We kind of talked about this before the podcast and texting yesterday just about the game. And I think I'm going to start tallying how many times I get irrationally angry after games. And I think this is count number two. I was pretty PO'd after their loss on a Sunday against the Rockies, where they ended up dropping 2-3 in that series.
Yes, I was too.
I was infuriated. I don't know why. I think they'd lost like four games at that point. And then you have, of course, the Braves where they're 17-6. They're 11 games over. And I'm still angry that they lost a game that accounts for about 0.6% of their entire schedule. And I still get mad about it. So my irrational anger count currently stands at two.
Well, I remember leaving that game thinking, how did they lose to Tyler Chatwood?
I was so mad.
Right. I was furious. And then I'm watching yesterday going, listen, Julio Teheran is a good pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a bad pitcher. He's a good pitcher. But, I mean, you can't get anything going against Julio Teheran. Then the most sure-handed shortstop the Cubs have had in my lifetime boots that ball at short, which should have been a double play ball to get Lackey out of that inning. And I'm like, so Deanna and I are sitting on the couch watching this game. And to set the scene for you, the two of us are doing wedding planning stuff.
Yes.
As we're doing this, and I am trying.
Bad idea.
Right. Horrible idea. So I am trying to both be a reasonably considerate fiance and help her with all this wedding planning stuff while simultaneously watch the Cubs game. So I'm now, imagine me sitting there, attention divided. She goes, so what do you think of this color scheme? I'm like, God, Russell, how do you boot that ball?
Yeah.
And then it goes back to me. Oh, yeah, I like that blue. That's a really nice blue. Oh, my God, how are we losing to the Braves? So this is what was going on in my apartment during that game. But you know what? As you said, we were rationally angry. And the reason why is because the Cubs are good and we expect them to win every day. And we never expected that in the past.
No.
So I'll take irrational anger over a game against the Braves that they obviously should have won, knowing that they're still 17-6 having lost the game.
Yeah, for sure. And first of all, when you said the most sure-handed shortstop in your lifetime, you forgot about Sean Dunston.
I was waiting for that.
I'll digress. However, that's where you got to go the whole your whatever you think is best, dear. Like to use, and then if she gets mad at you, use the, you remember Bob Brenly's line that he always used to say on the broadcast? Yes, dear, you're right. I'm sorry. He used to say that all the time.
Yes.
And it still holds true. So, yeah, and that's a situation where there just needs to be a better allotment of wedding planning time that needs to be filtered around when the Cubs are playing. Well, I know you only have a certain amount of time in the day. We're all grown-ups now.
Yes. Well, I mean,
it's April. You're not in mid-season form yet. It's okay.
Correct. But, well, I might already be in mid-season form. But at least it's not like Deanna doesn't know this is coming from me.
Oh, she knows.
She knows. So it doesn't really bother her, thankfully. But I am like splitting my attention. So then when Russell gets the hit first, the error that puts Zobrist at third, I'm like, oh my God, we got a break. So the first thing I think is when Pat and Ron had the exchange where Pat goes, Cubs get a break. And then Ron would yell, we deserve it. Like we always deserve the break, right? Always. If a break happened, the Cubs deserved it.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So I'm yelling this out at the TV and then Russell gets the hit. We tie the game. And I'm thrilled, obviously, that they scored the run to tie the game. And so now I'm like dancing around the apartment as we're still trying to do this wedding planning stuff. But at least if they were going to lose, they lost in 10. Because if this game had gone 15 innings, my productivity level in terms of the wedding planning would have gone way down.
Yeah, for sure.
So at least it was that.
The whole thing would have been planned. You would have had an opinion on nothing if it went like 15 innings.
Right.
It would have been done and you wouldn't have had nothing to do with it.
Jordan, why do you have this? I don't know. I mean, Russell was batting. I couldn't pay attention. I don't know. Rizzo was at the plate. But listen, they're 17-6. They played great. We've mentioned the record. But, Beto, I mean, when you look at what they've done, it's obviously remarkable. They've been very dominant so far early in the season. They have the best run differential in baseball, all this stuff. We've talked about that through the first month. Jake Arrieta is still a superhuman cyborg pitcher who, in his worst start of the year maybe, goes five innings and allows one run and three hits.
Quality start streak, right?
Right.
Because he goes five innings and gives him a run. Really bad.
Yeah, he stinks. They should trade him. But so now they actually go into a week where they're playing some good teams. They have the Pirates, as we record. They're playing the Pirates for the next three, beginning on Monday. And then when they get home on Thursday after this quick three-game trip, they're going to have the Nationals as the Fighting Dusties come to town for a four-game series. So, I mean, this is finally where the schedule starts to get more difficult. And not that it's going to be all year, because I think the National League, while there's probably seven or eight good teams in it, as you and I have discussed, you know, this is kind of the upper echelon here. The Pirates, we know, are a very good team. They've won eight of their last 10. They played very well. The Nationals are 6-4 in their last 10, but they've won three in a row going into today. So two very good teams, two very good pitching staffs, and two teams that have played reasonably well both at home and on the road. So this is kind of one of those measuring stick weeks for the Cubs, is if we have to be more convinced they're a good team. But I think it's more clear if they go out and have a good week this week.
Yeah, they'll face Garrett Cole in the first game of that series, so we'll probably know the result by the time this podcast is released. They do catch a break not facing Francisco Liriano, which is a guy I feel like they just never can hit.
No.
Francisco Liriano. I'd rather face Cole than him. Then you welcome in a Nationals team who just swept the Cardinals in St. Louis. The Pirates, their first opponent, where the Cubs have actually played a little bit better on the road, but the Pirates are hitting the ball, cover off the ball.
Crushing.
That outfield is absurd between Marte, Polanco, and, of course, McCutchen. That's as good as it gets in left, center, and right. And they've had some difficulties with their pitching staff. Tyler Glasnow is their top pitching prospect. He's probably going to come up soon. They've tried Juan Nicasio out there. John Neese is there as well. Came over from the Mets. Jeff Locke and Garrett Cole. They've done it offensively. So it'll be interesting to see, because the Cubs, as good as they've been, and everyone talks about their lineup and how patient they've been, and justifiably so. But I think the story of the season, at least so far, has been how good the starters have been to begin the year. But to me, it's going to be fun to see those hot bats and what Pittsburgh have done to go against how hot the Cubs starters have been early on. And it's, again, I don't want to make too much of it, whether they win this series or not, like we tried not to when they played St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, when we talked about the same thing on the podcast. But at the same time, it's fun to see some of these matchups of successful staffs going up against successful lineups early on in May.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the run differential, Beto, it's exactly what you said. The Cubs so far have scored 139 runs as of May 2nd before the game. They've allowed 61. The Pirates have scored 133, so they're almost as good in terms of run production. They've allowed 115 runs, which is third most in the division. Every team in the National League Central has allowed at least 109 runs, and except for the Cubs, who have allowed 61.
That's absurd.
That's how good they've been. So, and the Nationals are right there too. They've only allowed 61 runs, and in the National League, the two best teams in terms of run differential have been the Cubs and the Nationals. So, and the Pirates, you know, like you said, they're playing a lot better baseball. I think things started to go better for them when they had that series in Colorado last week. Andrew McCutchen has a three-homer game that sort of got him going. He got off to a really bad start to the year. So, listen, this is what you play for. These are the series that you want to watch. I mean, it's fun when the Cubs are beating up on the Brewers, who are awful. I mean, that team is going to lose 100 games. I love it too
because Ryan Braun's on that team.
Well, yeah,
when he loses.
But I mean, look at some of the guys that are running out of that bullpen. I mean, Sam Freeman, dude, learn how to throw a strike.
He was pitching like in a crucial spot.
Oh, I know,
like a very key part of the game, and he pitched in three games, and his ERA was like 20 something or whatever.
Well, I was at the game on Thursday when Arrieta pitched, and there were so many walks. I mean, listen, I get it. That's what the Cubs do, that's their MO. We've talked about it a million times already in four iterations of this podcast about how the games are going to be longer. The Cubs have a great approach. I love it. Listen, I love the walks from a Cubs perspective, but the whole game I'm thinking Harry Doyle, like ball four, ball eight, ball 12.
Yeah.
How are they laying off pitches this close? I mean, every guy, it's like you can't go 3-0 on every single batter, Brewers. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, Craig Counsell was going to have gonna go crazy in there.
And Taylor Youngman was horrible. I mean, this guy is getting
he was a first round pick.
I know. And you know what's crazy?
5 years ago.
You should look at his splits. His first 15 or 20 major league starts, he had like a good ERA. He had like nine wins. And then it just went not just south, it went complete Wile E. Coyote nosedive off the cliff. This guy went from like very solid, young, promising first round pick starter, I think 2011 draft out of Texas, to horrible. And I don't know what happened to that guy. And I don't want to spend the podcast talking about the Brewers, but it's fun when the Cubs can beat up on a team that's obviously inferior. But if they have a good week this week, I mean, what are your expectations? You've got seven games against two teams that you figure will be either in the playoffs or in playoff contention, certainly for the Pirates, whether they're a wild card or a division winner. I mean, I think that for this to be a good week, the Cubs have to finish with a winning record, obviously. But, you know, if you find a way to win both series, that'd be great. It's going to be hard to win three out of four against the Nationals. But if they take two out of three for the Pirates and they split with the Nationals, I would sign for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the Pirates, and I mentioned earlier the Cubs have played a little bit better on the road, or at least it appears that way. And I think one of the factors that comes into play is the weather at Wrigley Field has been horrendous. The wind has just been howling in. And I know it howls in for both teams, but the Cubs are built on power and they haven't been able to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And on the road, that hasn't been much of the case, where we've seen a little bit more success in that department. So some high scoring games wouldn't be a surprise at all this week for me, at least in the first three in Pittsburgh. And then when they come home against Washington, you mentioned how few the Nationals staff has given up. And so far this year, this Nationals team is the team that we expected to see last year. Yeah. They were the odds-on favorite to win the NL pennant going into 2015. They were easily the biggest disappointment in all of baseball. Matt Williams was just god-awful as a manager as well. They bring in Dusty, and we always talk about he always gets teams to sort of overachieve, especially in that first year. They're getting ridiculous pitching performances from Scherzer, and obviously Strasburg has been healthy to begin the year. Gio Gonzalez has been pretty good as well. So it should be a fun series. And the Nationals were actually a team I picked to win the NL East this year over the Mets. I just didn't think the Mets would be able to sustain that sort of luck and health throughout an entire season like they were last year. So it's going to be fun, though, because you said it. There's some really good teams at the top, and then there's just complete trash at the bottom. We talked about the Braves, the Brewers, the Padres come to town after the Cubs play the Nationals. But at the top, it's pretty good. So when you get these matchups throughout the course of the season, it becomes a lot of fun because you actually see some of the marquee matchups out there. And we have that this entire week going to Pittsburgh and home against Washington.
Well, I mean, I think that I don't want to bag on the Brewers too much because it's obviously a rebuilding team and they're trying to figure out what they have. Right. This was us 2 years ago. I totally get it. And poor Taylor Youngman, I felt bad for the kid. I mean, he just can't throw a strike. And when he does, it's right down the middle because you know he can't throw a strike and then it's getting hit. Some of these young guys that they have in there, I mean, we could talk about 3 years ago when they had Nate Sheerholtz in right field and Donnie Murphy at short and, you know, a team that was just...
What?
Right, I mean, it's amazing to think that that was 3 years ago, right? I mean, I remember doing post-game shows where they were playing in Philadelphia and Donnie Murphy hit two bombs and that was the story of the game. And so, thankfully, we are not there anymore. And we're watching requisite good baseball, but I love, too, how even after the loss, and yes, it stunk that they lost to the Braves, who were awful, but...
Yeah, irrational anger count number two.
Yes, but I love the goofy suits thing, and I know that there are going to be people that... I guess people that listen to our podcast are inherently Cub fans, but I have said this to other people, and they're like, oh, you're just this Cub fan. I'm like, well, I mean, I am a Cub fan,
but... It was cool when it was in Tampa. I thought it was funny.
But here's the thing. It's all calculated. Joe knows they're going to have their first real week of the season, right? They played a month. They've beaten up on some bad teams. They did play the Cardinals, which they beat 2 out of 3, which they deserve credit for. But they played a lot of sort of subpar teams here early on. And now they're having a week where they're going to face some good teams. Not that it's like the big statement litmus test in May. But you know what I'm saying? These are, you want to see him play well. So he knows there's going to be a little bit more pressure. So you don't think it's a coincidence? It's not a coincidence, in my opinion, that this was the first week they decided to wear ridiculous suits. But of all the suits that I saw, I don't know about you, Beto. I think the winner was Joe Maddon with the tulip suit and the tulip tie.
I agree with you on Maddon.
That was tremendous.
I did see a tweet, which was hysterical, when they had a full team photo of everyone dressed up. And you're going to like this. Our guy, remember Joel Brand, you know, our guy from WGN Radio has been the voice of the Kane County Cougars. He tweeted, it said something along the lines of, it looks like the Cubs raided at the Catman's closet. And I just lost it. I thought that was so perfect. David Kaplan in his tailored suits and all the different colors and pastels.
Has Cap seen that? He would love that. If you sent that to him, he would love
it. Oh, he'd lose it. He'd love it.
Yeah. Yeah. But Anthony Rizzo, I'm looking at these pictures. Anthony Rizzo was wearing a stars, like from the American flag, suit jacket that had the sleeves cut short. Like a
That's respect.
Short sleeve.
They love that in St. Louis.
And then, yes, and then he's wearing a striped tie with white and red stripes, a white shirt that is short sleeve and red shorts. Okay. Joe Maddon is wearing a blue suit that has tulips all over it with a red shirt and a tulip tie. Chris Bryant looks like the Stars and Stripes as well with red pants, probably from Express. His since I've seen those,
isn't he not the most perfect Express model ever?
He really
is. Person?
So
I'm like, that makes just so much sense when I saw that.
You know what? It's so funny because I was on the L going to the Cubs game last weekend, and this woman sitting in our train car looked up and goes, "Oh, look, there's Chris Bryant in the new Express ads. He's sexy." It was like, oh my God. It's honestly perfect marketing. He's a good looking guy, he's a great player. And he should be modeling.
And he's young.
Right. I mean, he's really got a rotten life. I really feel bad for him. I mean, it's just, it's too bad the type of repression he faces as a good looking millionaire baseball player. I mean, we should start a GoFundMe for the guy.
I know.
John Lester with the deer antlers all over it. Kyle Hendricks had the red plaid. Hector Rondon has.
Yeah, Rondon looked good.
Right, with like all the like the boom pow, all that stuff from like those old cartoons.
There's
Jorge Soler had. It is. I was thinking that the groomsmen should wear what Jorge Soler was wearing, which is a suit with $100 bills. It was tremendous. And I think that this stuff is fun. And what I love about what they've done, and you can call me a homer and you can call me whatever you want, they make baseball less serious. It's more fun. It's still a game. And I understand that they're paid millions of dollars and it's big business. But this is great stuff. I was sitting there laughing at my computer screen last night looking at this.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not new. It's just getting more attention now because Chicago is obviously a much bigger market than Tampa Bay. But they did the same thing with the Rays when Madden was there, and I thought it was hilarious. And I know this was premeditated that they were going to do this, have this sort of dressed up road trip. But it's even more fun after they lose, just because it seems like Joe tends to do this these types of things after a tough loss or where they didn't play that well. Like if they lose, maybe they don't take batting practice the next day or they do something funny in the clubhouse, because he understands it is 162 game seasons. And he doesn't maybe get irrationally angry like me. More of his anger is more of the rational kind. So it's fun to go ahead and do this. And we talked about this in our first podcast, how much we loved all the stuff they did in spring training and to carry that on. And I think that's part of what makes this Cubs group so great. Yeah, if they were losing, if they were playing like the Brewers or they were playing like they were 2 years ago, this stuff maybe not be as fun. I get that. But it does kind of add to the whole mystique of this group and this organization, the way they're currently heading. And it's been a lot of fun, and looking forward to this week in general. Each week, something new, I feel like, with this team.
Oh, it's tremendous. And John Lackey with the camo suit and the cowboy hat.
That's,
and Travis
that's
Wood.
So standard. He probably didn't even know there was a road trip.
He was going to wear that no matter
what he was going to wear.
Yeah. I'm telling you, these would be great groomsmen outfits. Could you imagine? I don't think my wedding would go real well.
Yeah, don't. Yeah. Deanna really shouldn't plan the wedding during a Cubs game now, because then you'll get ideas like this.
Yeah. What about the piano key necktie? What do you think of that? No.
Exactly. You're going to turn like the bouquet toss into like you giving signals behind home plate and having her throw it, that sort of thing. You're going to be crouching down on two knees.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'll just be signaling in the play, send the bullpen coach out, the whole thing. Lester Strode was looking mighty nice in his suit there as well.
But I love Lester Strode.
The man.
Easily the most undervalued bullpen coach in baseball. I have zero.
That's like a hawk comment. That is totally a hawk comment.
I have zero facts to back that up. Zero metrics. I don't know any other bullpen coaches in all of baseball, but Mike Brenly is a bullpen coach with the Boston Red Sox.
Oh,
Bob's son, who was
nice.
A former Cubs minor leaguer. But I just love Lester Strode. I was doing broadcasting when he was in the Cubs, or when he was a floater in the Cubs organization of the Peoria Chiefs and the rest of the minor league affiliates at the time. And he was just the coolest dude. So I get pumped whenever I see a Lester Strode.
Right. But that's so much
three war bullpen coach.
That's such a hot comment though. Cause you know how a hawk will be like, Gordon Beckham, that guy hit the longest foul balls I ever seen. I'm like, what?
If Fox thinks it's relevant, I'm clearly being a little
no,
facetious.
I know. I'm just saying, like, when a hawk will say stuff like that, it's just like, how could one even know?
Speaking of really long foul balls, and this is really random, if somebody said, who do you think hit the longest foul balls or the hardest foul balls that as a Cub, I instantly think of Jerry Hairston Jr.
Oh,
that dude
yes.
just rip liners 100 feet foul down the left field line. Nobody was better at it.
Oh, he made a living doing that. Like, if you needed to wear a hard hat sitting in left field.
Jr.
Yeah.
There's my obscure. I got to get at least one obscure Cubs reference in. I think last week we had Bob Scanlon. 2 weeks ago was Leo Gomez.
Yes.
Today it's Jerry Hairston Jr.
I love that. That's fantastic. But honestly, I think this will be a really fun week for the Cubs. Obviously, it's going to be exciting to watch each of these games as they unfold and how these guys do. Like you said, I mean, the pitching staff has been outstanding. Jake Arrieta picked up right where he left off. I mean, John Lester, after that non-throw to first with that bizarre play on Friday, comes back. I thought that was one of the most dramatic innings of the year.
That was a fun game.
When he gets consecutive strikeouts and then the ground out to first to get out of this seventh inning. And it was – the pitching staff has been great. But if you had to pick an MVP of the Cubs so far for the month of April, who would you pick?
I think I would stick with Arrieta and how good he's been. I mean, that's the obvious pick. He was the NL pitcher of the month that we were kind of talking about right before we started recording. And the whole staff in general, I don't want to go cliche and say, oh, it's a team MVP, it's a staff MVP. But Arrieta's just picked up right where he left off. And that's so big because we knew this team would score runs and not everyone has hit as of yet. And not that the pitching staff was a question mark per se, but you wanted to see how they would come out after they pitched last year. And Arrieta's, it's just been unbelievable. It's been fun to see Lester, who got off to a horrendous start last April, pitch very well to start this season. And Hamill kind of get over those second half woes. And Hendricks has been good. Lackey's been good at times. But Jake Arrieta, bottom line, has just been so good. So I might have to say him, but I think that kind of leads you to a different pick and maybe somebody that's at the top of the Cubs lineup.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, the answer is Arrieta, but I can make an argument for two more people. The first is, as you just led me there, is Dexter Fowler, who obviously you go, we go. The guy's been great, 350 average. I mean, the on-base percentage is, as we enter play on May 2nd, 470, but it's
baseball.
Almost – right, but it's been about around 500 the whole season, which is ridiculous, obviously. The other guy that I could make an argument for, and just hear me out on this.
Is this going to be something that Hawk would say too?
TWTW.
Is he a TWTW?
Well, no, here is going to be my argument, okay? And let me explain.
Okay.
My other argument, and I'm not saying that he is, because my honest answer would be Arrieta and then Dexter Fowler, but I think third most would be Jason Hamill, and here's why, okay? Jason Hamill is 3-0 with a 0.75 ERA. You knew that Jake Arrieta was probably going to be good. I don't know if we knew that he was going to be Bob Gibson again, but like you knew that he was a good pitcher and he would be very good, okay? Dexter Fowler, none of us expected him to have an on-base at 500, but you also knew that he was a good player, and at least from July of last year when the light bulb finally popped on with the Cubs and he started playing like the guy that he had been in Houston and in Colorado, has obviously carried that over in a better way than expected so far, but you know he's a good player. Jason Hamill has always been historically a first-half guy that has stunk it up in the second half. His splits are, you know, pretty different.
Very Jekyll and Hyde-ish.
Right, in terms of first and second half. But coming off the way his season ended, I don't think any of us really had an expectation for what he was going to be, right? I mean, you were just kind of hoping that he would be serviceable. And not only has he been serviceable, he has been outstanding. His ERA is lower than Arrieta's right now. And the guy's
got. I'm not going to throw this in the trash. I was like waiting for you to say someone obscure. I think that's a completely viable selection because
Tommy
LaStella,
MVP.
Thought you were going to say something like Tommy LaStella just to get me all a rise out of me.
Well, no, I do love how Tommy LaStella's walk up music is Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. It's perfect for the kid out of New Jersey. But I think that Hamill deserves a lot of credit. He said that after last year, he had to go back over his mental prep for games, his physical prep for games, changing his mentality, changing his preparation, changing the way that he both physically and mentally approaches pitching. And we can always listen to comments like that and go, well, okay, well, what's the difference? Has it made a difference for you on the field? He's pitched great. He single-handedly won them that game in St. Louis where he outscored the Cardinals 2-1 to win that game. I think he's been great. I think he's a good guy. I think his teammates like him. I think the organization likes him. And I think that he deserves credit for the way that his season has started. Because I think that we all kind of had a feeling that John Lester would be good, right? That last year was the first year of a big contract. He had to be the ace. He had to be all this stuff. I think it got in his head. And I think that you kind of felt like this year Arrieta goes in as the clear ace. John just has to be John, and he's been really good so far. But I think you kind of expected him to be a good pitcher. I don't think any of us expected this. So props to Jason Hamill.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I did want to make one more point about Dexter Fowler because I feel like I kind of understated how important he's been when you asked me about team MVP.
You go, we go.
I had this conversation with a friend a couple of nights ago, and I guess I'd thought about it in the first few weeks of the season. Let's go back to the day they signed him. He signs the one-year deal, a huge surprise, goes out in the field. If that doesn't happen, if Dexter Fowler is in Baltimore right now, where is this team and what's the outlook for the rest of the year? Yes, obviously they'd be really, really good. They'd still be good. They have enough talent and depth to make up for it. But with and everything's different. We're not exactly sure what sequence of events would have played out. But if you didn't have Fowler and somebody like Kyle Schwarber goes down for the season, then what do you do? Javi Baez was hurt to begin the year. Are they forced to play Ben Zobrist in the outfield a little bit? The Cubs offense kind of struggled with some of the big bats early on. I know Rizzo's hit a bunch of bombs, but Hayward hasn't hit at all. Zobrist has been hot and cold. Bryant's been hot and cold. If it wasn't for Dexter Fowler, I wonder how many wins this team would be. I believe his actual WAR is like 1.7, but you think about what he's done, and the Cubs' depth was really tested when Schwarber went down. If they didn't have Fowler, this would be a completely different look and a completely different team and a completely different lineup heading into the month of May.
He's the table setter. He's the guy that gets it going, and that's why, you know, I keep saying you go, we go, because that's what Joe said last year, and he's right. And he has been an enormous boost for this Cubs team. And I agree with you. Listen, they could have let off Jason Hayward the way that he's hit. It wouldn't have been a good thing. All he does is walk, and he's not getting any hits. And his slugging is too something. I mean, it's been terrible. So you obviously – I'm not worried about Jason Hayward. I think he's going to be fine. He just had a bad month of April. But the point is, this guy has been the table setter that has set up the Anthony Rizzos and the Chris Bryants. And Chris is starting to play like the Chris Bryant that we saw last year. And interestingly, you just made me think of this and what you just said. One of the things that we've seen recently, and I know that he missed a couple of games because of the ankle, but he's fine and, you know, he's back in the lineup and whatever. Chris Bryant has been playing a lot of left field of late. And I know that he wants to be a third baseman. I know the Cubs are not going to publicly say that he's not the third baseman because I think for the majority of the time this year, he is going to be the third baseman. I still think that. But he looks good in left field.
He's
a hell of a lot better than Jorge Soler in left field, who is carving deli meats in left field. I mean, he is the butcher.
Horrendous.
So the bottom line is, if you're – and Tommy La Stella is pretty solid. I mean, he's a little dude who hits, and I think he plays an adequate third. And whether it's him or it's Javi Baez, you can fill in at third base pretty well, I think, from a defensive standpoint. I don't know over the course of a long period offensively – what you're necessarily getting, but I think you can get decent numbers. The point is, I'm more inclined to see how long they can stay with Bryant in left field because he plays a much better left field than Soler. He is clearly since Schwarber's out and isn't going to play left field, he's the best left fielder on the team. And he is. And he should play left field. And I know that his value might be better as a third baseman, but you know what? He's on a long-term contract. And you're in win-now mode. And I'd rather see Chris Bryant in left field because this was, to me, I maybe it's not fair. And you tell me whether you think this is not fair. Because the one thing that I think we often forget with Jorge Soler is he's young and he hasn't had a lot of experience both in the minors and the majors because of injuries and because, you know, he's never been able to get consistent time at any one place because these injuries have sort of piled up on him and performance has been an issue. But Kyle Schwarber gets hurt in Arizona. This is your golden opportunity, if you're Jorge Soler, to seize the job, to say, I am the guy, I should be in left field every day, and here's why. And the guy's batting .190 with a .290 on base, and he's still chasing pitches, and he is a brutal outfielder. So, in my view, they should put Chris Bryant in left field and leave him there for now. And I'm fine with putting either Baez or La Stella or whatever mixture of guys at third base.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and you can definitely make a case that the Cubs' optimal lineup right now is the one you just mentioned, is Bryant in left, someone like La Stella, who not only he's an adequate third baseman, he's not great. I can't imagine he's much worse than Bryant. I'd have to look at some of the metrics there. But he puts together a quality at bat pretty much every time. He's been really good to start the year. Baez is obviously a much better defender, but the at-bats haven't necessarily been there. So Lair, I expect to heat up as the weather does. I'm not going to make an excuse for him in that regard.
Oh, I will point out one thing with Soler. Thankfully, Madden banned those Smurf outfits that they were all wearing last year.
That he can't see out of.
So, right. So now he is no longer a Smurf. So I will give him credit for that. He is not in that blue hood that you can't even see his face. That whole thing was, I hate to agree with my dad on this because my dad always gets ridiculous with his body language stuff. But it just was like bad optics last year when the guy's striking out and you can't even see his face because it's covered by this blue hood and the whole thing was ridiculous. So at least that's gone. But
yeah,
anyway,
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And we saw flashes of what he could be at the end of last year and into the playoffs. And maybe he's not going to be that hot all the time. I think you said it best when you said he just hasn't had the amount of plate appearances to really figure out who he is. And this, all the injuries and the lack of experience and the fact that he didn't start playing baseball till later than pretty much everyone else that he's on the diamond with. He's had roughly one season's worth of total plate appearances, and that goes all the way back to his first year in the minor leagues. So I think he just needs some more at bats. We've seen the ability for him not only as a hitter, but as a patient hitter at times. He just hasn't been that guy this year. He wasn't that guy to begin last year, and we'll see where it ends up. And I think that he'll still get a decent amount of at bats, but for the time being, I think you're absolutely right that if the Cubs are in win now mode, then keep Ryan in left, have Listella Baez play third base until Soler figures it out.
You know, I keep taking the long-term view on a lot of these things, even though I know that we're in win now mode. Could you see the Cubs dealing Soler before August 1st? If you had to bet on whether he's on this team or off this team on August 1st, where are you betting?
I would say he's on the team because I feel two reasons. First, if he's performing like he is right now, then you're trading him at pretty low value.
Yeah.
Secondly, the
what
Cubs,
if he gets hot?
I'd play him because here's the problem. There's
what
my second
get
point
a
is that they don't have the depth
right
anymore.
Well, maybe not. Yeah.
So if it was a situation, and I think this is why they didn't make the trade. I mean, you look at it from simple math is that people were clamoring for him to get another starter, a number three starter or another four starter before the season began and gave up a guy like Soler or Baez. But the problem is what happens if what happened? Kyle Schwarber goes down and your depth is gone all of a sudden, or at least not as plentiful. If you wait till July, which I think was the plan, and the Cubs decided they needed to upgrade the rotation, then you shrink your injury risk by literally 2/3 of the season. Yeah. Instead of having to worry about a guy getting injured for the year over a 6-month span, it's only over a 2-month span. And I think that's kind of what the Cubs are waiting for. They no longer have that luxury. So unless they're completely content on Listella or Baez at third and Brian in left, and Baez is figured it out with the bat and he's playing really well and everyone else is healthy, maybe you consider it if you can get that elite level pitcher and package some other prospects in there. But I would be surprised if Jorge Soler is dealt at all this season.
All right. So what's the expectation for this week? 7-0?
Yes. What did we predict last week? 6-0? And we were what?
We were 3-1.
Now twice? Right. I just, they're not rained out. I feel like if they play in Pittsburgh in April or in May, it's a guarantee that at least one game gets rained out every single year.
It is amazing.
Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, it's a lot. Some they're getting rained out. And I'm sure other teams think about that when they come to Chicago and play the Cubs. But 7-0 we're going to go with. 6-0 with one rain out in Pittsburgh. Wednesday rain out on getaway day.
Listen, don't mean a thing without the ring, as you would say.
Exactly.
So, all right, that's going to do it for this week on our podcast. By the way, the last few weeks, I kept telling people that we were on iTunes. That was actually false. However, we now are on iTunes. So we will tweet the link out again. I have now figured this out. I'm a true genius. I thought we were on iTunes because I could pull it up on the podcast link, but it was coming from Podomatic and not from iTunes. We now are on iTunes. So make sure you search for us, B-Squared Podcast, Brian Beto, Jordan Burnfield, search either of our names. You will find it. The B-Squared Podcast is now on iTunes. You can also find us, of course, on Podomatic. Follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Beto. Follow me on Twitter at Jordan Burnfield if you want the links, because we always tweet them out after the podcast comes out. And Beto, our Facebook page.
Yeah, you can like us on Facebook, the B-Squared Show. Just search for that, B-Squared Show, and that should pop up. And we will post the link to the podcast weekly on there as well.
All right, I'll talk to you after the 7-0 trip.
You got it, buddy.
All right, see ya. That's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Burnfield. This is the B-Squared Show. We'll talk to you next week.